All right, open your Bible with me to the book of Isaiah. Buckle your pew belt, because I'm still going to finish this message. I believe God brought us here and brought us this way for a reason, and part of it's this text. There are, in America, on any given Sunday, somewhere, supposedly, 128 million people in church. 40% of Americans say they attend church. There is some debate about that. Some say it's about half that number, that 40% say it, and only about half of that much get there. But even at that, we're still talking about somewhere around 70 million people who are in church somewhere, in some denomination, some type of church in America every Sunday. Now, I don't know about you, but 70 million people will get you elected. 70 million people will change policy. 70 million people will change the face of America. You get 70 million people who decide the White House should be painted green with polka dots, and guess what? 70 million people all going in one direction will change a nation, especially if it's closer to the 137 million that say they go to church. And I hear that number, and yet, when I look around and I just, whether it's the news or the paper or just my everyday experience of living life, I'm not sure what's happening with that, however many, 70 or 137, whatever. I'm not sure what's happening. Why are we not having a larger impact on society than we do? For example, just to put that in comparison for you, again, 40% of Americans say that they attend church, even if that's half wrong, and only 20% of Americans attend church. The Centers for Disease Control tell us that less than 2% of the population of America is homosexual. And yet, when you think about that, that less than 2% of America is homosexual, stop and think for a moment. How many laws, how much change has happened in our nation, how much has happened in our culture because less than 2%, let's say they're wrong, let's double it, let's say 4% and throw in another percent for good measure, let's say 5% of Americans have professed a homosexual lifestyle, and yet everywhere I look, some rule, some law is being changed, something is being enacted to go along with this group of people. So why is it that if 20% or if 40% of America is in church this morning, why are we not seeing more change based on our opinion? Why are we not seeing a greater influence in our society based on that? Again, that's not saying Christian. I understand that. But 40% who show up in church, again, let's say 20%. Let's knock off half of that. Let's say 10% of America is in church. That's still at least twice the number that's reported for homosexuality. And this is not, I'm not bashing right now, not even on the issue of homosexuality. I'm just simply using that as an example. We know our culture has been changed and impacted by that lifestyle. Then why do we not see, if anything, I think most of us would agree, that in America the impact of the church, of Christianity, is actually diminishing. It's actually going backwards in our society. And so my question this morning is why is that? And I think Isaiah here deals with that. And I know some don't particularly care for Old Testament lessons, but one of the things that I see when I look at the Old Testament, especially the prophets, is the actions and the things that were going on with the Jews often correspond very closely with some of the things I see happening in America today. And if that is the case, and I think it is, then we know that God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And how God reacted to the Israelites acting that way, how God reacted to the nation of Israel, gives us some clue of how He is likely to react and treat America when we follow that same course. And in God's world, two and two is always four. He never changes. And so if He reacted a certain way to the sin of Israel, then the sin of America will demand the same response to God. And in this chapter, at one point early in the chapter, Isaiah actually describes Israel in the first 10 verses, or first 9 verses, he describes Israel as a dumb donkey. He says, "You're dumber than a donkey. You're dumber than a donkey." And he uses the example, the reason he says that, he says, "You're dumber than a donkey because even a donkey knows who feeds him. Even a donkey knows who brings him food and responds to that animal." I can remember as a kid going over, you go over to feed over to the barn to feed the cows. They could be down in the very corner of the pasture, but they see you. They'd see you coming head to the barn. What'd they do? They knew you, and they'd run up to the barn. Not much get a cow to move, but to run. They'd run to the barn because they knew who fed them. They would run to the water trough because they knew who watered them. And God says of Israel, "You're dumber than a donkey. You don't even respond to who is blessing you. You don't even respond to who is feeding you." America and the church in America has been more blessed than anything, any organization, any group in history, and yet we're dumber than donkeys. We're not responding to the blessing of God. And really it boils down, what God does here with Israel, He boils it down. And of all the things he could point to, he comes here in these 10 verses and I think points again to this issue of the 100 and some million people who are in America who are having no influence on our society. God, through Isaiah, says the problem is your worship is hollow. Your worship is unworthy. Your worship isn't accomplishing anything. You're showing up, you're going through the motions, but your worship, your supposed relationship with me, isn't changing you. It isn't having an impact on your life and the lives of people around you. And so he's going to go in these 11 verses, he's going to go in and point out the problem with their worship, the problem with their attendance. Again, we've got, depending again on what you want to do with the numbers, 127, 70, whatever, 35. Again, if you want to cut it in half again. But still, 35 million people who are showing up for church should have some impact on our nation, some impact on our culture. But why aren't we? I believe the problem is our worship. It's not true worship. And I think part of the problem is we don't understand worship. Most of us, we come into church and we come with the mindset, let's see what God's going to do today. Even think about it. That's how we talk about worship. We go out and, I hope you'll go out this afternoon, go to work tomorrow, as Debbie's talking about a while ago. You'll go to work and say, "Man, we had a great service this morning and yesterday morning, and God really showed up. God did some great, and we pray ahead of time. God, I want you to show up and do great things in our worship service." But is that worship? Let's imagine for a moment we live in a land with a king. And you go in to honor, to worship the king. When you go in to worship the king, do you pull up a chair in the corner of the palace and say, "All right, king, dance for me. All right, king, let's see what you got. All right, king, show me something. All right, king, go for it. Sing for me. Dance for me." You don't walk into the palace saying, "I hope the king will do something wonderful." When you go to worship the king sits on the throne, and you do the work. Isn't that right? Now, I know we don't live in a kingdom. I mean, there's a few folks who are elected who think we do. We don't live in a kingdom, but we know enough about how kings work to know that when you go into the palace, you bring the king a gift. When you go into the palace, you bow before the king. When you go into the palace, you sing the praises of the king. When you go into the palace, the king sits on the throne and you do the worshiping. Maybe our problem is our whole approach to worship is that we're coming into the church, we're coming into worship and saying, "All right, God, dance for me." When I believe worship ought to be the God of heaven sitting on his throne telling the angels, "Shh, my people are praising me. My people are worshiping me." Let's look for a moment at the problem. Let's look for a moment at what's wrong with our worship in America today. I'm talking about in the church as a whole. What's wrong with our worship? First problem I think we see is the very danger of religion. The very danger of religion. Religion is dangerous. I don't know if y'all know that or not. Religion is dangerous. More people have been killed in history in the name of religion than anything else. Yeah, religion is dangerous. Look what God says through Isaiah. Notice, first of all, their routine. Look what he says. He says, "To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices? Why do you offer all these sacrifices?" Why are you repeating these sacrifices? Again, we know what the Bible... Why were they repeating those sacrifices? Because the Old Testament told them, the law told them, do this sacrifice, go through this festival, go through this feast, this fast. They had all kinds of rules. When it came to moving the tabernacle around, they could only touch it a certain way, only go certain days. I mean, they had more rules than Carter's Got Little Pills. I mean, they had all kinds of words and rules about their worship. But God says, "I'm full of your burnt offerings." Look, He says, "I'm full of them. I've had your burnt offerings up to here. I'm tired of it. I don't delight in the blood of the bull. I'm tired of your sacrifices." What? The operative thing to notice there is, to what purpose are you sacrificing? To what purpose are you offering up these feasts? To what purpose are you giving these fasts? To what purpose are you having these festivals? Are you just doing them because mama did them? Are you just doing them because mama's mama did them? Are you just doing them because we've always done it that way? It's Sunday, and our family goes to church on Sunday. It's what we always did. It's what we do. It's what we'll always do. And God says, you know what? The religion has become routine. He doesn't say, listen, I want you to notice very carefully, if you read this passage, God doesn't say what He says in other places to Israel. He doesn't accuse them of worshiping false gods. He doesn't accuse them of idolatry. He doesn't accuse them of marrying out of their culture. He says, you're doing the right things, but you're doing them wrong. You know you can do the right thing wrong, right? You know you can do the right thing the wrong way. You can do the right thing at the wrong time. And God says to him, you're offering the sacrifices. Listen, I want to tell you, this morning, you know it's obvious again when we look and say that 130 million people are in church somewhere this morning. Cut it in half, say 65 million. Cut that in half and say 32.5 million. Let's say 32.5 million people are in church today. If they were there and God was influencing them and God was impacting their life, tomorrow would be a different day in America. We'd see the divorce rate come down. We'd see the issues change in America if those 32.5 million, 65, 100, whatever number it is, weren't just going through the routine, weren't just showing up and going through the practice. It's a routine. It's just something they do over and over. Again, they were doing the right thing. They weren't worshiping false gods. They were going to the temple. They were doing the right things. They were going to the tabernacle. They were going through the right mode. They were doing all the right things, but it was just a routine. Not only was it a routine, it was just a ritual. Look what he says to them. When you come to appear before me, who has required this at your hand to tread my courts? Really important word there that I want you to see, that the word tread. The word tread. We pretty well know what the word tread means, but another word for it would be to trample. Why do you trample my courts? You ever seen maybe the fairgrounds or over at the racetrack or something like that, when they bring in, they have a huge crowd and they park all over the grass and they walk in and out and they camp, and you can come back by and you can see how the grass has just been trampled down. You know, you go by one day and the grass is all sticking up and flickering in the wind, and you go by the next day and you can just see it's just been trampled. You ever been by the racetrack and after the race has been in town? And I don't know what it is, and I like NASCAR too, but somebody's obviously never taught NASCAR fans what a trash can is. You go over there and it's just obvious. They just trampled the place, threw their garbage everywhere, and went home. It's the exact same thing God is saying about the church. It's the exact same thing He's accusing the Israelites of. You just trample my courts. You just come in and just you go through the ritual. You just come in and you just trample it. You just trample it. It's not impacting you. It's not changing you. You're just trampling the courts. You're going through and he says you're making it worse. Here's something that's really painful that you need to hear out of that verse. You're trampling my courts. You ever been, again, you go by the racetrack or the fairgrounds, and after they leave, if you ever look, it looks worse, doesn't it? You know, in many ways they do more harm than they do good. That's exactly what God is saying that many of us, our worship is doing. He says you're doing more harm than good. Have you ever heard anybody make this statement? And I know it aggravates us as good Baptists. And there's all kinds of ways to respond to it. Have you ever had anybody say, "Oh, I don't go to church. There's too many hypocrites in the church." For most of us, that just burns us up. You ever think maybe part of the reason it burns us up is because the truth hurts? Maybe they got a little too close to home with that statement. Maybe they're getting up in our business. They went from preaching to meddling. That's what God is saying. God is saying we're doing more damage. Any of you ever played team sports? Or you don't have to use team sports. If you hadn't played team sports, in the workplace. I'll stick with team sports, but the workplace is just as good. You got a team of 10 people. And you got one or two, you got a group of employees. Tommy knows this, Kenny knows this, Martin's that, you know, if you've been Kevin, you know, those of you that have been in management, you don't have to be in management if you've worked. You got a group of employees. Many times, you're better off with five good, dedicated employees than to have 10 and two of them be lazy as dogs. Because them two lazy ones, what will happen, you don't have eight good ones and two lazy ones. What will happen before long is, I don't know why it is, but the eight good ones won't influence the two. The two, before long, will influence one of the eight. And now you got seven and three. And before long, it's six and four, five and five. And before long, the whole load of them ain't worth killing. That's exactly what God is talking about in this, when He says, you're trampling my courts. He said, we're doing more damage than good. I guarantee you, and I'm not going to bother them, but I guarantee you, especially in construction, Tommy and Kenny both have said to somebody, "Go on home, I don't need you, I'd rather do it myself." You're doing more harm than good. Probably had that happen at the cleaners. Go on home, you're doing more damage than good. Listen, we need to ask ourselves, when it comes to the worship of our God, are we doing more damage than good? Do people see us and hear us say, "Oh, Debbie's talking about putting on Facebook or whatever that you went to church Sunday"? Let me just, as pastor, let me ask you to do me a favor. If you got one of those tags that says, "I attend Poplar Grove Baptist Church," and you acting like an idiot, would you please turn that tag in? We'll give you a refund. You might even make a profit on it. Nothing like having one of them people got one of them "I love Jesus" stickers on their car ride by and flip you off as they go by. You ever had that happen? I have. Just go on. I got a hammer and chisel. We'll get them stickers and, you know, just like, you know, all them. We'll get that sticker that, you know, Tommy's got screwed out. We'll get them tags and stuff. If you're not going to act like, don't take them off the car. If you're going to act like a nut, park out back. Don't park out at the road where people see your car when they come by. God says, our worship, our religion is doing more damage than it's doing good. We see the routine, the ritual. Look what he goes on. He continues in that passage and he says, the danger of religion. Look what he says, the revulsion. Folks, this is serious business we're talking about. We're not talking about, listen, I'm not trying to drum up an offering. I'm not trying to fill up the pews. I'm telling you, I'm showing you something that God says here. And God says, look what he says. He says, don't bring any more. Don't bring your vain oblations. You know what vain means, right? Same as it says in the Ten Commandments. Don't use the Lord's name in vain. Don't use it useless. Don't waste it. And he says, I don't want your vain obligations. Don't come in and put money in the offering plate just because it's you think it's your duty. Don't come in and teach a Sunday school class and then go out and live like a dog. Listen, here's reality. Of those 100 or however many, I'm going to stick with my 137 million. If of those 137 million that are in church this morning, a big percentage of them were out somewhere in some beer joint, bar, nightclub, running around with some woman, some man last night. And there's a real good chance they'll be there this evening or tomorrow. God says, don't bring me your pity offerings. Don't do it out of routine. Don't do it out of habit. It is an abomination, he says. He says, and again, he mentions, he says, your moons, your Sabbath. In other words, he's saying to them, they're keeping all the feasts. They're doing all the religious things. They're doing all these things. They're doing them. And look what he says. He says, they trouble me. I'm weary to bear them. Folks, I think God, if God could get the attention of the American church today, he'd say, I'm sick of y'all, of you gathering and singing and building buildings and doing mission projects, and you personally haven't been changed. He says, I'm sick of it. Listen, the reality is, you can get a group of Baptists to buy a passport, buy a plane ticket, go halfway around the world into some ungodly place we've never even heard of, build a school or take food or take water, and they'll do that. They'll spend thousands of dollars to do something like that, and they wouldn't walk next door to take a can of food to their neighbor. Folks, while I'm there, I might as well go ahead. I'll throw the Baptist under the bus while I'm there. That'll make some people who see this and hear this mad. All the preachers are against mission trips. No, I'm not against mission trips. I'm saying you take one next door, too. You take one down the street or across the street. There's people dying and going to hell. There's people in need right here around us. I'm all for mission trips. Go, great. Need to see what other... Not at all. But don't go on those while your neighbor's starving to death. Listen, it's a shame, my opinion, my sermon, you preach, absolutely you can preach next week, 137 million people in church, and that there is one orphan in America. It's a shame. The Bible told us to take care of the orphans, the fatherless. It's a shame. It's an embarrassment to the Church of Jesus Christ that there are little ladies and little men out there who are having to choose between groceries and medicine. It's an embarrassment to our government. It's an embarrassment to our churches that we've got that many Christians and we've got multi-million dollar buildings and we've got people without roofs over their head, without food in their stomach. We've got children without homes. It is an embarrassment. God says here, don't bother me with all your feasts and your routines. It's an embarrassment. He says, it makes me sick. And then look what he finally says. Listen, this is serious business I'm talking about, folks. He goes on, and look at the rejection, he says. And when you spread forth your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. And when you pray your many prayers, I will not hear you. Hello? I won't watch you, and I won't listen to you. Think about that for a moment. Think about that. But let that sink in for a moment. We know that the psalmist says, if I regard iniquity in my heart, he will not hear me. Most of us kind of understand that one. If I got sin in my life, God won't hear me. That makes sense. But do you see what he says? Here he says, if your worship stinks, not if you sin, not if you're an adulterer, not if you're a pornographer, not if you're a drunk, not if you're outrun, but if your worship stinks, if you're not worshiping me, as he says in the New Testament, in spirit and truth, if your worship is not worthy, you ever think maybe that's the reason we're in the mess we're in? It's the reason Israel is in the mess they're in. We're praying for revival. We're praying for God to move here. We're praying for God to do this and God to do that. God's saying, I'd love to do all that, but I want to work in your life first. I want to change you. I like the words of that old spiritual that says, it's not my brother, not my sister, O Lord. It's me standing in the need of prayer. You see the danger of religion. Oh, we're religious in America. We're more religious, whether you believe it or not, we're more religious than we've ever been. Go online, those of you that got internet, go online and search religion. Pick one. We got all kinds of religion. Well, we don't have the relationship. That's what we're missing. What does he tell us to do? How do we fix it? The delight of repentance. I love this. Biggest word in this statement is five letters long. And every one of us knows what it means. Wash. Clean up. Let me translate that for you. Quit it. That's what he's saying. Quit it. Don't do that. I don't want to make you go back too far, but I'm going to take you back to high school English for a minute. The words that are used here are the description of them are imperatives. Now, most of you know, you kind of know what an imperative is. It's got to be done. And you know, most of us, you know, you're of the age when parents spoke, you know, they listened, but, you know, if your mama said to you, watch, or daddy said, watch, you didn't go, you mean now? Me? Yeah, I used to substitute in the school some, and you say to them, sit down. Kid turn around, you talking to me? Or are you standing up? Yeah. If you are, yeah. If not, no, they weren't talking to you. Watch. You mean Tommy needs? No. Watch. Tomorrow? No. Me? Yeah. Cleanse. Make yourself clean. Change. You know, listen, it's not brain surgery. He says to us to change, to make ourselves clean. He says we're offered here the opportunity. Everybody, I love this because I don't care who you are, how old you are. Everybody here, you don't have to know Hebrew. You don't have to go to seminary. Everybody here, understand, wash, make yourself clean. Got it? We all know what that means. Just a matter of whether or not we're going to do it. Wash. Make yourself clean. You see the cleansing? You see the correction? Put away the evil of your doing. Again, quit it. Don't do that. Don't do that. Some of you remember the old Bob Newhart show. There's a clip on, you pull it up on YouTube, that you know, Bob Newhart, he was a counselor. And there was one of his patients came and started saying, well, he said, don't do that. Everything you'd say, Newhart said, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. God's saying, don't do that. Worship me. And put away those evil things and stop what you're doing. Here's the real test. Look what he goes on and says. And here's something that when you see this is kind of maybe a little bit surprising, because look at the commitment he says. What he says. Learn to do well. Seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge unfaithfulness, and plead for the widow. I was talking about orphans and widows a while ago. I got ahead of myself a little bit. Do you find it curious that Isaiah, God through Isaiah, has spent the last handful of verses saying, your worship stinks? You're just going through the routine. You're just going through the ritual. You're not serious about it. You're just showing up. And then he says in this verse, he doesn't say worship better. He doesn't say get a bigger Bible, sing more, give more. He says do good. Take care of the widows. Take care of the orphans. Take care of those that are oppressed, those that are homeless, those that are down and out. What we would call social ministry today. Do you get the connection? God is saying when our worship is right, our life will be right. When our worship is right, we'll have compassion for the widow, for the orphan. We'll have compassion for those around us that are hurting, for those around us that are broken, those around us that are lonely. When our worship is right. When our worship is right. He's saying when our relationship with Him gets right, it'll start affecting and flowing out onto those around us. We'll start looking for opportunities to serve. We'll start looking for opportunities to bless as we have been blessed. We'll start looking for opportunities to share the good news of Jesus Christ. We'll start looking for opportunities. Instead of being hoarders, we'll be givers. The word that's used in the church today is the word silo. Y'all know what a silo is, right? Many of our churches have become silos. You know what a silo is? Silo, where we bring everything in, where we store everything, but nothing ever goes out. When our worship is right, everything else will get right. Man is created to worship. That is our, as the Westminster Catechism says, that's the highest calling of man. You say, what about evangelism? You won't evangelize if you don't worship. What about the widows and the orphans? You won't care about widows and orphans till you worship. What about helping the needy and the hurting? You'll never do it. Not for long, not sustained, not correctly until you worship. Till our relationship with Him is right, nothing else will work. I mentioned it in the first part of this chapter. God compares Israel to a dumb ox, to a dumb donkey. The story is told of an old farmer who the pastor preached on that text. And the old farmer had been in the church forever. He went home that day and went out to take care of his animals. And he was standing down at the barn, standing there getting ready to feed, and his old donkey came up. And he reached in, he had a handful of food, and the old donkey was eating right out of his hand. As he stood there watching that donkey eat out of his hand, the words of Isaiah began to ring in his heart and his head. Tears began to roll down his face. And he said, this dumb old donkey loves me, comes to me, and all I ever give it is water and grass. But she loves me. She comes to me because I take care of her. How much more has God done for me? And he got saved right there in his barn feeding the donkey. Are we dumber than donkeys? God has been so good to us. He's blessed us in so many ways. Is our relationship, the relationship, most everyone in this room, you profess Christ as your Savior. Many of you I've baptized over the years. But is that relationship affecting your life and your other relationships? I tell young couples all the time when I'm getting ready to marry them, we'll talk a little bit, and I'll tell them, marriage will change you. Marriage will change you. I mean, look at Tommy. Tommy's only 29 years old. Look, marriage will change you. And if marriage doesn't change you, you won't be married very long. Marriage will change, but you won't be married very long. Because some of you, some of the folks come sit down, if you don't change, you're going to be lucky to get down the aisle, let alone stay married. You better change. Most of the time it's him I'm talking to. Marriage will change, or you won't stay married. If your relationship with a husband or a wife, somebody you live with, somebody you have children with, somebody you share your darkest secret, if that doesn't change you, wouldn't you say something's wrong in that marriage? If your relationship with a holy God hasn't changed you to the point where other people can tell, would you say that's a healthy relationship? I want to ask you to bow your heads as our musicians come. There are some of you here this morning, you don't know Christ. You don't have that relationship. You've never asked Him into your heart. You've never asked Him into your life. You don't know Him. You don't have a relationship with Him. Today is the day of salvation. You need to come. If there's not visible fruit in your life, I'm not asking you if you go to church. I'm not asking you if you hold an office in the church. I'm not asking you if your mama went to church. I'm not asking you how much you give. I'm asking you this morning, do you have a relationship with Christ? You can put a wedding ring on your finger and not be married. You can go to church. You can give and not have a relationship. Today is the day of salvation. You need to step out on the very first note. You need to come. Let us show you from God's Word how you can know Christ, how you really can have a relationship with Him that will change you, that will shape you, that will mold you, that will impact those around you, will have an impact on your life and the others around you. Christians, you need to ask yourself a question this morning. Is my relationship with God life-changing? Is my relationship with Him shaping and forming me? Not just am I coming to church. Not just am I giving, teaching, whatever. But has my relationship with Him changed me? I want to invite you to come and to cry out to God and say, Lord, I want my relationship with You to be so real, so powerful, that the others in my life can see it. I want my worship to be worth it as we stand.